My name is Martha Jansen. I am not any relative of the Jansen family who has been so important here at Holden Village. In fact, my name really is not Martha Jansen, but a pseudonym, because the story I have to tell you is a private one, and because there are certain risks to my family for my using my own name. I have written a book called Silent Scream. It is my life story, really, and it is using that book today that will carry us into this subject. I am something over 40 years of age, a person who has been largely middle class, white, Protestant, a regular church attender for myself and most of my family. I come from grandparents who were active in their churches, Scandinavian, Middle Western. I was a child born with potential and with gifts, but I was also born to a situation which was destructive and cruel. I am an incest victim. My book, Silent Scream, is by Fortress Press, and it begins with these words. I'm a victim of incest. My family was middle class, educated, respectable. But incest happens to many of the girls in our society, and to boys as well. Father-daughter incest is the most frequently reported form of the abuse, and the most likely to do lasting harm to the child. Because it happens in families, it is immensely destructive to a child's sense of trust, and it is kept secret because of the threat it poses to family security. I blamed myself. Children do that, even though the abuse happens because parents do not control themselves and do not honestly share their genuine feelings. Because my parents would not face their feelings, I carried the unspoken burdens of guilt and shame, self-doubt and sadness, fear and anger. My pain became rage, and it was repressed within me, a silent scream. No one helped me. Telling my feelings to you as I relive them is part of my healing process. It is redemptive to offer my experience to others who suffer, or to those people in homes, schools, clinics, or churches who may better hear, discern, and understand because of this book. Your sensitivity to my experience gives me hope and helps me rebuild my trust. I hope you will understand that I publish this book under a name that is neither my own nor that of my parents or children. That is a matter of protection for myself and for my children, for the world has not yet acknowledged or understood the dynamics of this problem. I look for the day when we need not be silent anymore. I would like in this private hour on tape to take you on a journey of a child through her adult life, from incredible pain and confusion to my present day sense of basic balance and harmony with life. It's sometimes painful to tell this story and to hear it, but there is hope in this story and life and even redemption. We have to begin, I think, by recognizing two important elements. One is how secret this kind of problem is. I would venture to say that most of you, many of you, have never said the word incest out loud in a serious conversation. It is an unspoken thing. It is so unbelievable to most of us. We cannot imagine ourselves in that position, as the violator, that is, and so we tend almost not to believe it's true. We also don't want to believe it's true, because it reminds us that we all have very strong feelings, ones that we don't even like to have. And it reminds us that it could be happening real close to us, because it's so prevalent. And so we'd rather sort of avoid it and pretend it isn't true. In a family where it's really happening, Everyone wants to avoid the problem because somehow it condemns everyone. It's a sign, of course, of a very dysfunctional family. Either one or many people in that family have big problems. And so it's better to pretend it isn't there. And unfortunately, the person who gets caught up in all of that and the most hurt by it is the child, the one who needs protection, the one who needs help, who needs someone to save him or her from the situation. Our culture does not talk about incest. It is a taboo. It is thought in many ways to be worse than sin, if there's such a thing. Thus, the child carries the burden in secrecy, usually having been warned, don't tell mother. Don't tell anyone about this. Sometimes in nice words, now you won't talk about this, will you? The implicit threat is one of power, danger. The child is fearful. You will discover as we read some of the pieces from Silent Scream that the child protects those people who don't want to know the truth. Arms. I was small and wanted arms, strong and welcoming, which would open and encircle me with love. Hold me, my small heart and tiny body asked. Hold the child. Show me love. Your arms were there, but stiff. And when they opened, there were hands not to welcome, but to pry. Because I could not trust those hands. I have never known the love of father's arms. It is a great loss, looking back. But when I was very small, it didn't always seem as if I had lost anything. A child doesn't interpret life as an adult does. So my relationship to my father was what it was, and I just accepted that that's the way relationships with fathers are. Bath time was fun. Warm water and sometimes bubbly, and a funny shade on my head to keep the shampoo from my eyes so I wouldn't cry. Darkness outside and warm lights in the house. Usually mother washed me. Sometimes daddy helped. I didn't know that he was having extra fun. When he laughed with me, or so I thought, because I was only 3. Then I was 30, bathing myself. I realized I seldom washed. I scrubbed, scraping away the dirt of a confused memory. Now my tears are not from shampoo. I weep for the innocent little girl who couldn't know the darkness yet to come. You see, a little girl wants to please, and she does what she's told. Daughters love to sit on daddy's laps. Me too. I would scramble up at the end of the day. We'd talk until mother left the room. Then we'd play. Now I know why I watch so carefully little girls sitting on their daddy's laps. As a child, I was not aware. I did not know right and wrong. I just knew what my parents did. I didn't make judgment on that. There were rules. Everybody has rules in their family. Lessons. Little girls sit still and don't twirl their skirts so much. Don't tattle. Talk nice to grown-ups. Don't talk to strangers. They might hurt you. Mind mommy and daddy. One does what one's parent tells you to do. At some point, I began to realize that what was happening in my life was maybe not like others. The poem is called Knowledge. Play and pleasure changed to fear and mistrust the day that someone said, "That's not the way parents and children act." I'd never known that before, And now I had a terrible secret, which I could never tell. Ever. I suppose I was about, well, what do you think, 5, 6, 7, when that happened? Image. It doesn't happen in nicer homes. Respectable people who go to church and live in clean neighborhoods aren't inclined to such activities. That's the problem, don't you see? Not a person I could tell would want to believe me. It would ruin the neighborhood image. Coaxing. When I'd hesitate, you'd coax me. Your voice was unusually nice, enticing. I'd acquiesce because I didn't know how to disagree, and I hoped someday to please you. Obedience. You insisted. I crinkled my face and my lip quivered, but you took my hand, so I followed you, small steps doubling large. If I drew back, you'd give my arm a jerk, and it was hard to keep my balance, so I followed. I obeyed. Children do that, after all. It's important to realize that when one begins to understand, either because someone has said something or because you just have a feeling about it, when you begin to understand that this is wrong, what's happening to you is not right somehow. A child then has to find a way to deal with that overwhelming sense of guilt at the same time as being caught in a situation that you can't change. And that's how it was for me. Here was this huge person, big for an adult size, huge for a child, who wanted to have various things happen. And how could I resist that, being small? And set next to that is the fact that I have to live with the reality that I went ahead and did it. Or rather, that I let it happen. There seemed to be, and generally is, no other way to deal with that than for the child to forget it. I mean that in a serious term. It is possible to block something out of one's mind that is such conflict that you can't live with it. I was so caught between doing something that was wrong, that I knew was wrong, that I could not change, that I repressed all memory of it. I had absolutely no memory till I was about 37. Danger threatened. I knew I had to get away, but there was no place I could go. A girl of 6 can hardly leave the yard alone. I stayed. Instead, I ran into my mind. I dodged between the messages of mother's eyes and grandma's sighs, messages which said, "Don't tell the truth, we cannot bear to hear." Cowering in the dark recesses of an attic in my head, I crept behind the broken furniture of my unacceptable rage and fear. Dust of decades, my forbidden secret, settled over me as I choked in guilt. Abandoned and abused, I sealed the doors so that no one would know. Mother loved me. She told me little girls should be very good, but she loved me. I never told her I wasn't always good. He told me I mustn't tell, and she would have cried or not believed me. So I never told her. She wouldn't want to know. Mother loved me, so I didn't want to hurt or disappoint her. Protection. Nobody took care of me. I was 7 and I couldn't run away. I couldn't tell nor shield myself. I was small. Children need protection, but nobody knew. Nobody took care of me. I can read that with sadness because I've now experienced, looking back at it all the sadness that in those days I hid from myself. Inside of me, of course, was a growing sense of rage and fear. How could I deal with this? What was I going to do? I had only to squash all those feelings inside of me. Sometimes they would come out in funny ways. I had a strange fear of sort of a phobia that didn't make sense to me at all. I was afraid of an object. Well, the object, no one's afraid of it. It's just a basic thing. But you see, I linked it up with my father. And it was one of the things that eventually led me to therapy. I couldn't put together why I should be afraid of something that was completely harmless. And little by little, I began to realize that all that was sort of a substitute for my dad. That's why I feared it. I put all that fear and anger into that object. This next one somehow is kind of hard to read. Dear third grade teacher, you found me daydreaming today. Usually I work real hard, finish on time, read lots of books, write poems that rhyme, and act like a very good girl. You scolded me again because I was daydreaming. You didn't know that yesterday, when no one else was home, Daddy made me lie on the couch with all my clothes off. He just sat in his big chair and looked at me, smiling a smile I can't understand. I was ashamed, embarrassed, and afraid. Today I couldn't remember my times eights, and I spent the April afternoon daydreaming. You didn't understand. It's hard for teachers and neighbors and friends and relatives to recognize the signs that this might be going on. Since we don't want to find it anyway, we usually don't look. How nice it would have been if I had lived in a time when people were a little more aware. On the other hand, I was such a good girl. No one could tell. I was so good because I kept trying to erase all that shame of having done something, even though it wasn't my fault, that I wish I hadn't had to do. We have around us other people who are rather inappropriate, you know, and we overlook them. Here's one I wrote about. It didn't happen to me. It happened to, perhaps, to someone else. Uncle Louis always gave little girls a big kiss. Everybody smiled. It was a French kiss, and I wondered why it was so wet and what a little girl should do. I looked to Mommy and Daddy and Aunt Bernice. They hadn't noticed, or so it seemed. I suppose they wouldn't dare believe that anything was wrong. They looked over my head and smiled at Uncle Louis. I guess it's okay, I thought. Maybe every little girl should like her uncle's kiss. I looked at Uncle Louis and I smiled too. Perhaps the most difficult years are those adolescent years. Now a person is moving into adulthood. Oh goodness, we think back to our adolescence, especially junior high. We don't know who we are. One minute we feel grown up and the next minute we feel like a child. That struggle in itself is enough without having to struggle with the fact that some adult is exploiting us and taking advantage and humiliating. One terrible night you asked too much. I was 12, far too small and young to resist. My tears burned my eyes and my throat filled with lead, which I swallowed until I turned into a statue, a metal sculpture. I would never be warm again. I am very grateful, of course, that that is not true. I did become warm again because I was able to find some therapy. Survival. Eyes can be blank. They can refuse to see whatever body or person is thrust before them. If you squeeze your eyes tight and hold them shut until they hurt and think to yourself, this is not happening, I'll pretend I'm not here, I won't think about it, over and over and over, you can forget in order to survive. There is a sense in which in our culture, the American culture, women are such objects, where men are the doers, the workers, the performers, the achievers, and women are something to look at and to see. And this particular poem called Junior High reflects some of that. And as much as it is all about my particular abuse subject, I think we have to recognize how this kind of thing exists in subtle ways all around us all the time. And I do believe it's time to confront it and not stand for it anymore. Embarrassed. I was humiliated when you handled me in front of your friends. Mocked because they talked about how I was becoming a woman and they laughed. You were the leader of the pack, the wolves devouring my self-esteem, leaving me bleeding to face the kids at school who didn't know why I was so timid, friendly, but afraid of boys. I look back on those days as the worst of all, days when humiliation spoiled every success and pride was abandoned in the bloody snow of cold, cruel wolves. I am particularly sensitive, of course, to that sort of thing every time I hear someone talking about a woman's good legs, her body, her shape, and recognize how the other side to that, the worst extreme of that, are the kinds of things that happen to me. In later adolescence, I experienced more opportunity to date and meet boys. I hardly did that at all in high school. And then I experienced a new kind of thing. It's called fickle. I'd date boys at college. If I liked one too much, I got scared. When I liked someone deeply, I was afraid to feel. Touching and loving was so compelling, so desirable. Suddenly, a mist of change would envelop me. I'd hate the boy, look for faults, draw away. We'd part, and I'd feel guilty because I'd been unfair. Fickle, youthful years. It has taken nearly 20 more to understand. I didn't hate the boys at all. I was only afraid to love them, afraid they'd hurt me, treat me nicely, just to get some favors, draw away or scold me, leave, just like you. In my adult years, I went through very normal patterns. I went to college, I worked for a while. After I was married, I had some children. But there was an unsettledness about me. There was a lot of confusion about my sexuality, for one thing. About life in general, I really hated my father, but you know, I didn't know why. And I looked at all those other behaviors of his which I didn't like, maybe his, oh, he was sort of arrogant, or his racism. Focused on all those other things, but you know, my anger was so much more intense than those things would be. And I began to have things happen to me that didn't make sense. Nightmares. I lived in the shadow of dreams, frightening nightmares that would cause me to awaken. Silent screams tearing through my mind. I pleaded with the darkness to take away my fears. But the dreams returned, often unexpectedly. Sometimes vague, sometimes repetitious. I could not run away. I had a sense of not viewing life in the same way as my friends and other people who seemed much more relaxed about some things. An example of that one is called a patsy. I used to say to friends, I'm a patsy, for compliments or special gifts or kindness from a man. Not only that I was pleased or felt cared for when a man treated me that way, but that I hoped I was loved. And in feeling so glad, I might do anything he wanted just to please him. A patsy. You can see how that ties to my childhood, how the little girl would have done anything to please her daddy, because she never had that sense that he cared about her as a person. So she would try to do other things and then sometimes be taken advantage of. I fell in love with a young man who called me Princess. I always thought it was a nice endearment and a pleasant dream, something a father might call his little girl. But the young man left too. If we examine the feelings so far of this little girl, there has been this move from caring about her father to rage. There's been this fear and guilt, fear of being hurt, guilt about the activity, deep, deep shame for doing something which she feels she should not be doing. Shame is one of the most lasting effects of this. One who has been an incest victim blames herself and is so ashamed of being a human being. Legacy. I began to realize I could hurt my children. I might teach them to abuse, to use, to take advantage of others, of sexuality. Or I might keep them stained in some subtle way by my past. That was when I knew I must discover what was wrong with me. I must try to change. I must go for help. So at something over 35 years, I did go to a therapist. I had gone to some others who were not particularly helpful. I have not found people in the church very well educated on this subject, and that would probably be my last choice, to go to a pastor. Unless I knew for sure that that pastor was extremely well trained. This matter is nothing for amateurs. It is not for friends to work out with us. It's not to be done on our own. We need good help, and we must ask around to find those kinds of therapists. Help me, I pleaded, never saying the words, but crying out in frightened eyes, legs clasped tight together or drawn up to my chest, arms stiff, body hunched. You were skilled enough to know the signs and kind enough to wait with gentle encouragement until I could trust you and tell. Telling you was the beginning of my life. You heard my plea and understood. Again, it's all buried memory. In my story, it began to come out a little at a time. Just sort of flashes of memories, little events. They didn't necessarily make sense. And I was with a therapist, though, who could help me look back. And after many months, well over a year of learning to trust the therapist, talking to him about other subjects that sort of went around this subject, finally I got to the point where I started to remember things from my childhood. My friends tell me they don't remember anything that happened when they were small. That's because they don't need to remember. Most experiences don't need to be remembered word for word. But one who must protect oneself, be on guard, measure sincerity, beware of harm, dares not forget the good and especially the bad. I remember being 3. Somewhere underneath my thinking, my childhood stays with me. And my childhood had for many years interfered, you see, with relationships with my husband, with my children, with friends, getting in the way of being a regular person. As I could finally begin to talk about it and let it out and understand it and realize that I was only a little girl when all this was happening to me, I had no control over it. Only then could I get some self-respect back. I awakened this morning uneasy, unable or afraid to recall a dream. I went about my day, but I knew he had returned. That meant my dad. Was I 8 or 17? I wasn't sure. I only knew from the wavering feeling in my stomach and my hands there was more to recollect. Another dismal or frightening moment was ready to unfold. I took a breath and called for an appointment. I would face it soon in therapy and put it behind me. My sigh reveals I tire of the need to face the truth again and again. It was hard work, I'll have to say that. But you know, I would go in for an hour. I would let out something that was explosive or heavy, something that was devastating from my background. And once it was out, I was free again. It was such a relief to me. I could get up from that hard work and go to work. Go to my job, I would be just fine. Here's a reference to shame again. I don't like to remember because, like everyone else, I'm ashamed to know. Each memory lowers my head nearly to my chest in shame. I feel worthless, ugly. I beg of myself reasons why I didn't resist. Even when I know that I was helpless and unable to stop the gradual debasement of my soul, I long to believe I didn't succumb. Of course, I tried to understand my father's behavior, too, as an adult one could. When you're a child, you can't. Somewhere inside you, there must be a chasm, an ache, rejection, abuse, a feeling of being inadequate. Your empty hollow waited, probably for years, 20, 27, until I came. Then, rather than relieving your ache by welcoming my life, a new start, a baby, a joy, you chose to take away myself, cruelly stuff my hope into your seeped hollow, rejection, abuse, contamination. I am left with your burden and my despair. It is so grossly unfair. And when one finally, as a victim, can get in touch with that, that's the only time you can really be free. I had to work on shame, I had to work on trust, but the anger was absolutely huge by the time I was an adult, to have been treated that way. As an adult, I look back and I look at other adults and I say, how could anybody do that to a child? But you see, as a child, I get caught, I was caught. Sometimes I can be that adult and angry, and sometimes I slip back and all of a sudden I'm a child. And I'm not angry anymore. Don't let myself be angry. Daddy didn't let me be angry. Nobody in my family let me be angry at this terrible thing. So I had to work hard to let some of that rage out. It took me more than 36 years to say aloud that you were cruel, thoughtless, selfish, using me. Even then, I fairly whispered the words, I was still protecting you. Now my stomach turns and slides as I find myself still making excuses, denying truth, turning anger in on myself. As I cover up your weakness, I am destroying me by protecting you. I've done it for 36 years. You can hear my anger now. I didn't always have it in therapy. It came gradually. I'm reminded that when one is angry sometimes, if you cannot turn it out, if you cannot put it outside of yourself onto the cause, the situation, whatever's causing it, then one sometimes turns it in on oneself. And as a result, you see, I had a lot of depression times. And I would not even recognize them, especially I think when my children were small. Spent a lot of time in depression. That's another thing that led me to therapy. I don't really dare to have a body. I try not to think about it or picture how it looks. I don't really appreciate it, care for it in tender ways. I hide my body in non-seductive clothes or sloping shoulders, proper behavior, and in my reluctance to go to a public beach. Don't look, please, don't see. This body belongs to me and I'm afraid to show it because I'm afraid to lose it. It doesn't help much to say that I look nice. I'm ashamed of what this body has done and afraid to have it happen again. I'm holding on to myself. No one will have me unless I let them. I've lost too many times before. I'm afraid to have a body. Whew. And a little grateful that that isn't always with me. I was in therapy for several years and able to release that tension, that anger, able to let somebody who heard the whole story and knew the truth about me and still loved me, able to let that person love me. That was so important. Little by little, I could even tell a few friends. And, you know, they didn't hate me. They didn't think less of me. It was a wonderful thing. It was so, oh, it was such a gift. To be loved by other people, even though this was my past. I do have some manifestations of the past. This poem's called Children. I know now I shall always be afraid for children. I watch them and adults nearby, wary, cautious, ready to protect the helpless if they need me. It's a magnified reaction which may never change, because it is reality for me, based on my experience with you. Oh, I would go to a child's defense at the drop of a hat. Maybe to, well, that's all right. I won't, it might be to my disadvantage, you know, but no, it would never be. I could never let it happen to another child if there was something I could do to stop it, or to stop any kind of abuse. Child abuse is the second greatest killer in the United States, second only to car accidents. It says a lot about what kind of people we are. That's why I've written the book. I want people to understand this is a very present thing. This is not something to be hidden. This is something to be talked about and revealed, to change it, as it has, through therapy, changed me and given me new life. Theologically, it's written in this poem. I have been glad for God the Spirit and for God the Son, because I don't believe my heart can ever understand that God is like a father. Having been fearful all those years, this was an important event for me. A friend told me that my past was not important. What matters is that I had the courage to face it. Courage. Me. After all the years of hiding and repressing the truth in fear, I am now the one called brave. I'm proud. Change. On a quiet September night, barely warm from summer, I breathe the world, fresh, renewing. A deep breath, at last relaxed. My body is able now to cry, to touch, to play, even now and then to trust. My body breathes freely because it belongs at last to me. Redemption. I am now able to help someone else. Listen to her stories, tell her that I love her, promise it will get better, and say how brave she is and strong. I can say I understand and share her anger, and sometimes gently touch her frightened face and say, it's all right. I can tell her she is beautiful, even when she feels debased. And now and then she lets me hold her, lets me share her deepest pain, the loneliness of her mistrust. I am healed enough to help someone else and find that all my pain has greater meaning. In sharing love, my trauma is redeemed. That's why I tell you the story today on tape. Someplace are children who need you to intervene for them because they can't do it alone. Love them. They are just ordinary people in ordinary circumstances, and they might be right down the block. Children need adults to take care of them, protect them, give them a chance for trust, release them from their shame and their anger. Incest does happen here, in our world. I hope that you will be aware of it now, and that someday perhaps you will be one of those people who can love a child who is a victim of incest, so that she does not have to live with a silent scream. Thank you.